Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is July 26th, 2016, at 1:07 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 84th episode of the show. In this episode, I'm going to be doing the monthly forecast for August of 2016 with Austin and Kelly. So, Austin and Kelly, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Hey there.
Hey, guys. All right. So, top of the show, first announcements before we get into everything. So, our two sponsors for the month, this is the software month where we're being promoted and sponsored by two software companies. The first is the software company Astrolabe that produces the highly popular astrology program called Solarfire, which I was excited to be able to be sponsored by because that's actually the program that I use and have been using for about 10 years now on a regular basis. So what do you guys use Solarfire? Are you guys familiar with it?
I use, love, and recommend Solarfire, and I also have to interject because it's originally Australian, so I'm very proud that it's been such a successful program coming out of, I think, Adelaide, Australia. But what about you, Austin?
Oh, this is kind of embarrassing, but I actually just use free stuff. I got in the habit of using free stuff and hacking together what I could. I do a lot of, what the good thing about that is that I've learned to do a lot of things by hand.
Yes.
But I've stopped being proud of that and started being frustrated with myself for that. And so I've actually been meaning to look into things, and Solarfire is at the top of my list.
Well, you will be happy then to hear about the full set of features that Solarfire has in it. So Solarfire is one of the most popular astrology programs on the market today. It covers the full range of astrological techniques, including natal astrology, synastry, electional, and horary astrology. It's got full coverage of techniques from ancient and classical astrology to some modern traditions like Uranian and cosmobiology. The beginners, of course, love the array of different interpretations that are available in the program, while professionals enjoy the ability to fully customize the layouts of charts. So you can find out more information about Solarfire at alabe.com. And the other program that we're being supported by, or is our sponsor this month, is called Archetypal Explorer. And this is one of the new generation of programs that is an online browser-based program, which is very exciting because then it's, you know, compatible with any system, whether you're using a PC or a Mac or what have you, or if you're on a mobile phone. It's based around the practice of archetypal astrology, which, as we just talked about in the previous interview on the last episode with Richard Tarnas, is the specific approach to astrology that sort of developed over the past 10 years out of his book, Cosmos and Psyche. So this program takes a lot of sort of tips and specific things, specific models from that approach to astrology. And it has just this beautiful design interface where one of the primary things that it does is it will show you your transits using sort of relatively wide orbs, but it shows them as sort of like almost like a graph, like a neon graph, where the transit builds up and sort of increases in intensity until you get to the peak moment of intensity at the exact sort of aspect of the transit. And then it sort of drops off or sort of slopes off. So it's actually a really cool program, and I'd recommend checking it out. Have you, either of you guys seen it yet?
Is that put out through the CIIS or someone associated with that?
Yeah, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was created by somebody who was either a student at CIS or who was somehow connected with that group out there in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw something about it on Facebook. It looked really interesting.
Yeah, I'd say it was definitely worth checking out. I've been using it for the past few months and it's pretty cool. So my little blurb for that is Archetypal Explorer is an online program for personal development based on the practice of archetypal astrology. It uses a powerful method of transit analysis combined with cutting-edge data visualization and cloud computing to display the ebb and flow of archetypal activity over time. It renders both personal and world transit activity and will display transits across any scale of time from a week to a month to a year to a century. You can use it to navigate backward and forward in time in order to inform, orient, and navigate your life in powerful ways. So you can find out more information about the program at archetypalexplorer.com. And we are giving away a free 1-year subscription to Archetypal Explorer on the next episode of this podcast for patrons who support the show on the $5 tier, or to one lucky patron who wins the giveaway. And then we're also giving away a full copy of the previous program we mentioned, Solar Fire, to one lucky patron on the $10 tier. So all you have to do to basically enter into the drawing for the giveaway is become a patron of the Astrology Podcast through our page on Patreon at the $5 or $10 tier, and then you'll automatically be entered in to win. So you can find out more information on the description page for this month's raffle, which is at theastrologypodcast.com, and just go to the giveaways page at the top of the navigation, and you'll see the description. All right, so and we'll be doing that raffle in the next episode. So that's the sort of starting point. Now we've got that out of the way. So it's been a really crazy month, I think, just in the world in general. And maybe we should start by just sort of decompressing and just checking in, seeing how you guys are doing sort of personally and what you've been up to. So what's going on in your personal lives?
Well, I am gearing up for some crazy August. I've been at home for July, so that's been kind of nice. I haven't been traveling. So it's been nice. I really enjoyed, I think, something Austin said in the last show about the different feelings, the different energy in July with the Cancer versus the Leo. And I really took the time with the strong Cancer energy at the start of the month just to kind of be at home, be grounded, be really nourishing. And it's been a lot of organizing. A lot of things moving and shaking, like coming out of that Mars retrograde, the way forward is becoming clear. And there's a few cuts and shifts and things that are part of that. So it's been good. Productive probably is a good way of saying it.
And are you teaching in San Francisco in like a day or two or something?
Yes, I'm flying out tomorrow. This is the start of my kind of crazy August, which is technically the end of July. Yeah, I'm teaching in San Francisco Thursday night. I'm giving a lecture called Planets, Passions and Problems, and looking at the different ways planetary strength can, you know, create a bit of a problem or a passion around some of your planets. And then at the end of August, I'm back out on the West Coast doing my 3-day moon intensive with Laura Nalbandian and Kira Sutherland. So there's a lot going on.
Awesome. That's exciting. Well, I was just out there a few months ago and it's a great group. So I'm sure you'll have a good time.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm interested to hear what you guys have been up to as well.
How are you doing, Austin?
I had a really nice July. Absolutely loved it. Let's see. The thing that was most exciting is probably hard to talk about. I do much of meditation and energy work practices every day. And I had lots of very dramatic, exciting, awesome things happen on the inside.
Yay!
Yeah, I had some breakthroughs in my practice. Stuff I'd been, you know, like literally one set that I'd been working on for about 450 days, I'd done every day. So that like kind of peaked, which is exciting. I went to a wedding, which was really nice. It was the first wedding since my own. I have a, you know, Aww. A different perspective on them now. Only missed you by, I think a couple days up in the Bay Area, Kelly.
And yes, that's right. That's right. You guys are just home from it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just been teaching class. I've been teaching a new class, you know, one I haven't done before. That's not quite as, straightforward technical as what I usually do. My care and feeding of the birth chart class, which is sort of looking at planetary strength and weakness, and then looking at remediation and just sort of looking for the extremes of dignity in charts and then figuring out what to do with that. And, you know, looking at the fact that sometimes strong planets we lean on too hard and try to replace other parts of we try to Mars everything if we have a good Mars. We try to Jupiter everything. So, you know, kind of looking at that and with the idea of trying to be a balanced human being and have a balanced life, or at least a little closer to balance. And that's gone really well. It's been really fun. My students are really engaging the material, which is always a pleasure.
It has such a cool name too, Austin, like the care and feeding of the birth chart.
Well,
very cool.
You know, I'm Cancer. Thank you. I'm Cancer rising. And it was
totally.
You know, all these planets in Cancer. And that was just the way I was thinking about it. So,
awesome.
Yeah,
well, you know. Sounds like you've made progress since like the previous month where you were feeling a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, I sort of course corrected in June and then started feeling really good in July.
Nice. All right. Well, as for me, I've just been, I did the podcast with Ian at the beginning of the month, and then that kind of bookended my writing period for this month, which has just been focused on filling in tons of citations in the book and starting to do a final go through of that in order to fill in footnotes, basically, and just like hundreds of books and articles and things like that need to be cited. But that's going really well. And I did this whole piece on Hermeticism and the Hermetic origins of Hellenistic astrology in relation to the supposed founders, Hermes and Asclepius and Necepsu and Pedaceros. So I'm actually talking with my editor, Aaron Cheek, about doing the next episode of the podcast on that topic and exploring the sort of Hermetic origins of Hellenistic astrology, as well as its connection with alchemy. So
beautiful.
Oh, were you going to maybe have Aaron on?
Yeah,
Aaron's going to.
That would be great.
Very cool.
I chat with Aaron all the time about alchemy and East and West and all sorts of things. And his astrology is coming along nicely.
Yeah, and he's been just amazing helping me to edit the book and shape it up. And it's in much better shape having gotten his feedback and gone through that with and having him, you know, read some of this stuff for the first time, because he's not somebody that's, you know, taken my course or something like that. But he has this great background in that time period coming at it from the perspective of alchemy in the Greco-Roman tradition. And now he's seeing the other half of that, which is the astrology more. And it's been really interesting getting his feedback. So yes, I think the next episode, originally that was going to be the fourth episode of July, but I think we might move it to early August instead. I should also mention that that's probably where I'm going to announce the giveaway winners. Since I may not be able to squeeze in a fourth episode this month, in the next like few days after we do this episode, we may push that to next month. So yeah, so that should be good. And writing is coming along well, and I'm hoping to finish. Well, actually, I don't want to talk too much about the book, because I feel like I talked a little bit too much about it earlier this year, and that may have motivated, some other things. So moving on to yes. Our forecast. Should we start with a review? I mean, I think we did that once a few months ago, and that was probably smart, and it might be more sort of appropriate in this instance, because so much has happened in the world, and it's just been such a crazy month since we last talked. And I mean, we sort of, I think, Austin, one of your last comments on our last episode was just, I was saying something like, you know, thank God we're getting out of the Mars retrograde or something like that. But you pointed out, you were like, it's just stationing right now at the end of June. So we're really not clear of it at all. And I think you ended up saying that there was something else involving Uranus that ended up being relevant to that somehow as well.
Yeah. And if you look at a lot of the most traumatic things that happened in July, you could time them to this. So basically, Uranus in Aries and Mars in Scorpio do not have a classical aspect, but they were within a degree. They were basically in the same degree for a long time. And so when a planet would come along go through that degree in Cancer, it would square Uranus and trine Mars simultaneously. And Uranus and Mars, especially a stationary Mars, are capable of great violence. And so it was when Mercury and Venus and then the Sun all made those aspects that a lot of things went crazy. And it was just something I noticed, like you said, like literally the last five minutes of the episode. And then it was something that I started watching after that. And I was like, oh no, we underemphasized that. And we were so happy that Mars is actually direct that right. We may. Oh, well, and actually one thing about that, the news was terrible, but and usually part of the sort of joy of astrology is that you get this really nice reflection between the micro and the macro, right? The individual and the collective. But I didn't see a lot of trying to figure out how to not use swear words. I didn't see a lot of poop shows on an individual level. A lot of everybody seems to be doing pretty well. Whereas you know, every time you check the news, like another 100 people were dead, you know, in some sort of atrocity. It seemed like there was a lot of macro doom, but I didn't, I don't know, maybe in that, that could just be me tuned out. But I didn't, I just didn't see that, that sort of struggle reflected on in people's personal lives the way that I usually do.
I would agree. I noticed that with my clients too, that I just sort of started tuning out the macro level because it was just a little bit distressing. But it didn't seem to be coming through personally with people in session.
Yeah. And usually there's just like a one-to-one. It's like, oh, something bad happens in the world and my clients are miserable, right?
Yes.
It's usually that simple.
And go ahead.
Oh, and you haven't been seeing clients this month, right, Chris?
I've been trying to basically ignore everyone and just focus on writing. So I don't, okay. I don't have, I
mean, so no one should take it personally.
Right. So I haven't seen any, made any observations myself, but yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anyone in my immediate that I've been forced to interact with over the past month, you know, having any major meltdowns, but it has been pretty brutal. I mean, maybe we should mention just a brief recap since we're sort of taking it for granted. I mean, some of the different things that happened were, you know, there was the coup in Turkey, which was a major and still ongoing sort of news story and potential, so even humanitarian crisis potentially.
Yeah, well, it's really what they're calling the counter coup that's been ongoing. The actual coup was, you know, had about 12 hours of life in it, but the counter coup is alive and strong and kicking.
Right. Yeah. And there's some pretty bad stories. Baris Ilhan, from Turkey, one of the more prominent astrologers, she posted this beautiful photo where she showed the moon the night of the coup was in between. It was just visibly in between Mars and Saturn.
Oh, wow.
In an enclosure, or at least you could see Mars and Saturn, pretty close, even though there's, you know, the sign boundary since Mars was in Scorpio and Saturn is in Sagittarius. Nonetheless, you've still got the two quote unquote malefic planets sort of like right next to each other on the ecliptic. And so it does create this situation where, you know, if a planet moves into that space in late Scorpio or early Sagittarius, it's separating from one malefic and then applying to another. And I thought that was a really interesting point just in terms of like the lie of astrology of seeing that happen. And for her, of course, she's living in Istanbul and it's all happening around her. So it was a lot more sort of personally relevant and clear, stark in that sense.
Yeah. Well, and another thing about that date, that was when the sun was mutually applying both to Mars and Uranus within half degree. Mars and Uranus were both at 24 and the sun was at 23:40.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's it that dynamic that we glossed over last time, but yeah, that was interesting. I noticed that too, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting that you have literally the military, portion of the military turns against the existing government, and with Mars, right, the moon, it starts with Moon Mars, and then it just ends with Moon Saturn. Saturn's just like, nope, order. Quote unquote,
order is restored.
Yeah, not necessarily a friendly order, but you know, order.
Sure. So yeah. So that was an interesting sort of what's called enclosure in the Hellenistic tradition or besiegement in the medieval tradition as a sort of manifestation of that. And then, I mean, around the same time, there was the, you know, the truck, the incident that happened on Bastille Day in France.
Yeah.
That killed at least like 80 people. What else happened this month?
Oh,
something in Germany.
Well, there were cops shooting
people. Oh, and people in the US.
And cops getting shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a whole sort of, there's been tons of protests and then, you know, people getting killed and there, you know, issues in terms of, the use of force on the part of police and then, there was this sort of reversal that happened and suddenly, you know, eight police officers are killed by a guy with like it's not a machine gun, but with like an automatic rifle of some sort. Things were just really crazy this month. And that was like a weird backdrop as I'm trying to tune out most of the world and just like write about first century history and stuff like that, that there's this sort of weird backdrop going on. And then at the same time, there's also like the, you know, the political drama that's like playing out in terms of, you know, the US as well. So I don't know if we want to necessarily...
Inflamed passions.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, and that was actually something that Kirk Kahn mentioned a few days ago. As he said something about like Saturn in Sagittarius. He was mentioning this on Facebook. He's a former vice president when I was president of the Association for Young Astrologers, and he makes the program. What's it called? I'm blanking out on the name.
Planet Watcher. I'm looking at it right now. It's my favorite.
Planet Watcher. Oh, that's one of the free programs that you
I love. Planet Watcher is always open in a window if my computer is on.
Yes. Kurt programs that, and he also programs the calendar that we use for these monthly forecast episodes. Anyways, he pointed out, he said something about like Saturn and Sagittarius seeming like it's tending more to like ideological extremism in some sense, and people either seeing things in black and white or like not accepting sort of like compromise or nuance or like middle ground positions, but sort of like having this tendency to go all the way in one direction or another. And I thought that was an interesting observation, which you know, I think we've probably made, or I know you made at one point, Austin, in some of your Saturn and Sagittarius sort of forecast stuff.
Yeah,
right?
And I think we talked about it for 5 or 10 minutes when we did our preview a year and a half ago for Saturn, or a year ago for Saturn and Sag.
Sure. And is that something, I know you wrote the whole ebook on it, is that something you feel like comes out as a natal thing sometimes, Kelly, or is this more of a transiting thing? Or
no, you definitely see it with people who have Saturn in Sag natally. It's a little bit of that kind of, you know, getting on your soapbox and being a little bit rigid about the way that you see things. And it kind of feeds in too with one of the big ideas I sort of have been sitting with for August, which is this really strong emphasis on the dry quality. Mm-hmm. You know, Saturn, yes, it's a cold, dry planet. Sag as a hot, dry sign, obviously. And so we've got this double dry thing, and dry is literally very cut and dried. It's like, nah, this is the way it is, or this is the way it isn't. And so you see that natally with people with Saturn in Sag. And then, of course, with both the sun coming into a fire sign already, but for most of August, and Mars coming back into a fire sign, that's that idea of this excessive dryness is something that I'm sort of sitting with as an underlying theme.
Yeah, that, I think that's perfect. That's actually what my column this week was about.
Oh, wow. The bulk of
it was just like way too much fire, way too much fire, way too much hot, way too much dry. And how, I don't know how, I hate it personally. I need moisture to survive.
Yes, me too. Yeah.
I'm like a frog or something. Like I can leave the water, but I need to go back in or my skin will get crispy.
Yeah.
So you guys are associating with this, with the sort of like inflaming of passions and things like that that's happening right now.
Yeah. Just imagine what happens to your skin when it's too hot and dry. It cracks and starts to separate, and anything that touches it will irritate it. You know, it's inflamed.
And that idea, that separation, is the theme that I keep coming back to with too much dryness, because that's what dry does, is it separates. And that is, that's the theme, I think, if we had to pick a tone for August, is separating. And are you separating from things that you need to create healthy distance from, or are you separating from things because you're just reacting? I think that's kind of the two ways to really, people are going to experience it.
Sure.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so just on a sort of elemental and sign level, August is way too much fire and then a whole lot of Virgo.
Yeah. And we can't even say Earth in general because it's just Virgo.
It's just Virgo. I mean, on a symbol level, as of the second day of August, we have the sun in Leo, which is going to be 2/3 of the month. We have Saturn in Sag all month. We have Mars in Sag all month. We have Uranus in Aries all month. And then we have a little bit of Venus in Leo. And then we have the moon in fire signs 3 times, right? And then towards the end of the month, pretty quick in the beginning there, we get Mercury and Venus and Jupiter all in Virgo, and then the sun joins them in Virgo for the last third of the month. So it's, it's just like fire and then Virgo, or fire and then Virgo on fire. would be the
totally.
Yeah, and so Mars, I mean, that's right at the front of the gate.
Yes.
Is that the saying, the start of the gate? I don't know what the saying is, but...
Out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So Mars... From horse racing, which is appropriate, because this is Sag. Because they keep them in gates, and then they open the gates, and then they all fly out.
Yeah, and that's appropriate in this instance, like you're saying, because Mars, right at the top of the month, on like the 1st or 2nd of August, moves right back into Sagittarius and rejoins... Saturn for the first time in several months. When was it? How long ago did Mars retrograde back into Scorpio? Like in May?
Yeah, it was the end of May.
End of May.
So we're returning back to sort of a position that we sort of left off since the end of May. But otherwise, it was there for a few months earlier this year. March 5th.
Yeah, March 5th to the end of May was Mars in Sag.
Okay, so we're returning back to that for the final sort of like culmination of the Mars retrograde period for the majority of August, as Mars is retracing its steps and then getting ready to finally pass over that degree that it originally stationed retrograde at, which I think was about 9 Sag, right?
It was 8.
8 Sag, yeah.
So, and then...
And then it can join Saturn and Antares at 9.
Yeah, Saturn's retrograded back to 9 or 8 at this point, so that the spot where Mars actually, you know, retraces and takes that final step where it stationed retrograde, it actually meets Saturn there at this time in August.
Yes, Saturn is at 9 Sag now, and it will spend right up until like the last 2 days of August at 9 Sag, because it'll station direct in the, you know, around the 12th or 13th. And that does highlight one of the more sensitive degree points for August, which is that 9-10 degrees of the mutable signs.
Indeed.
Of course, we're going to have the Mars-Saturn conjunction there at the end of August. The Virgo solar new moon eclipse, which is sort of August 31st, September 1st, is at 9 Virgo. And of course, we've got Saturn and Neptune kind of vibing through that. So you've spotted that as well, Austin?
Yeah, well, before that, I mean...
Well, yeah.
The end of the first week, we've got Mercury and Virgo.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury and Virgo squares Saturn and opposes Neptune, right? 9-10 degrees, mutable. And then a week after that, Venus has gotten to that point in Virgo. Venus squares Saturn, opposes Neptune, right? Just while Mars is making its way there. And so as the planets, as both Mercury and Venus race ahead through Virgo, they both hit that Saturn-Neptune square. And then on the 23rd, Mars hits Saturn, which is also square Neptune, right? They're like a degree off. And so it's really those degrees of the mutable signs are just lit up.
So it's just like a succession of inner planets hitting that Saturn-Neptune square over the course of the next month.
Yeah. And then the eclipse, as Kelly said, is right, you know, is in that degree of Virgo opposite Neptune and square Saturn, and with Mars just a little bit beyond it.
You're talking about the September eclipse?
Well, I think it's technically the 31st of August.
It might depend on time zone and location.
Yeah, Kurt put it on the 1st of September, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So I have it at about 2 o'clock in the morning on the 1st.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Pacific time. So
the evening on the 1st Sydney time.
Right. And then this month is unique because there's actually some ambiguity in the Planet Watcher calendar over whether there's an eclipse on the 18th, right? Right, Kelly?
Yeah.
And technically, if you use the definition of a new or full moon within 18 degrees of the nodes, it's technically just an eclipse, but it's going to be such a tiny eclipse that really we don't need to add eclipses into our forecasting. We could just hold over to September and there'll be plenty of eclipse action then. What are you going to say, Austin?
Yeah, I it's not an eclipse.
The ephemeris doesn't have it listed as an eclipse, but it is obviously listed elsewhere as an eclipse because keep bringing it up.
It's just a whiff of penumbra on the very edge of the moon. Like, you're not going to be able to see it anywhere. There's nothing to see here, folks. And it's not that might do something. A little
tiny,
bit
it's tiny.
But if we have to prioritize in astrology, which we do because we have a lot of data, that's not interesting compared to all of this other stuff, which is super interesting. And also, we have two legitimate obvious eclipses coming, you know, as the next two lunations. Like that solar eclipse will be within 3 degrees of the nodes, totally big deal. And then the lunar eclipse in Pisces, which follows, will only be partial, but it'll be a real eclipse.
Yeah, it's a lot closer to the nodes.
So we're talking about the full moon on August
18th. August 18th at 2526 Aquarius.
All right. Well, that's in my rising sign. So you guys are kind of bumming me out because I was going to take that as an eclipse that would be important for me. But now you've kind of snatched that away from me.
I don't really think that you want a south node south node lunar eclipse on your first house, Chris.
Take it as a full moon rather than eclipse.
Okay.
When people have those, at the very least, a lot of times they suffer, they get sick.
Physically,
that's something. I remember where there's one on my ascendant one time, and I lost my voice for 3 weeks.
Mm.
Hello.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. There's going to be an eclipse. And I was like, and I sounded like Tom Waits for weeks. It was like the longest I'd ever lost my voice.
All right. Well, I'll have to check in with you guys again in a month and let you know how that went.
You can tell us what you think.
No, it's not an eclipse. So okay. there's no data to record. Wait for next year. Wait for the nodes.
Yeah, so it's coming one way or the other. It's just a matter of whether it's starting now or whether it's a year from now when the south node moves into Aquarius and the north node moves into Leo. So basically everything you just said that was terrible still applies, but I have to wait another year.
Save that for next summer, and everything you dream about will be yours.
Yeah, if you can work on building up anticipation and dread, you know, it'll be all the better.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. So hopefully all the other Aquarius risings are not too depressed now.
Right. It's really not that big a deal. It's just not. Oh, it's not a wonderfully favorable thing to have an eclipse on the south node in your first house.
No, because the south node's a little tricky.
Indeed.
And we've all got plenty of, south node action coming up with this September eclipses. So
sure. So the September eclipses, and since that's, I mean, technically. Next month, maybe we'll save that for next month.
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about in August. Should we talk about destruction?
Sure.
Now I've turned into Austin. Our listeners will be like, what?
Well, we should also point out that we've got we're gearing up for Mercury retrograde, something that I don't know how much we talked about last time. I've been thinking about it a lot. So we have Mercury in Virgo forever this year.
We totally do.
Mercury enters Virgo on the 30th of July and will not leave Virgo until the 7th of October, which is more Mercury in Virgo than you can shake a stick at. And so part of me is super excited about this. I really like dignified Mercury. I get a lot of writing done. A lot of things go smoothly. And so we've got some of that, but the reason Mercury is going to be there so long is he does a big old retrograde, right?
Right.
And so Mercury stations, we're going to be building up to a Mercury retrograde through really most of August. But Mercury doesn't actually station retrograde until the 29th of August. However, the shadow, I believe Mercury hits the shadow of his retrograde, which is 12 degrees is what he's going to retrograde back to. He hits that on the 8th, right? So it's going to be Mercury shadow, which is not necessarily a huge deal. My rule of thumb is, or in my observation, is that I start seeing Mercury retro hijinks about a week before the retrograde station. So that would put us at like the 22nd or 23rd. And there are going to be hijinks of plenty around the 23rd anyway. Because of that Mars conjunct Saturn. But that's when I think you'll start getting the retro beams firing.
Okay. So, yeah, and that's by that point, it's like everything's in Virgo by late August, early September.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we get this shift to Libra in September, and then everything basically moves into Libra because we get that Jupiter ingress as well. But I guess that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Clearly we want to talk about September and not August.
September just has so much going on. Like, it's such a big cluster of things happening. But maybe I should back up. I forgot.
Your elections.
Most of the elections actually take place at the very beginning of the month. So I'm kind of skipping those over at this point and should probably pull them up. So As usual, I've still been writing. So Lisa Scheim's been doing the electional column and finding the auspicious elections for the Mountain Astrologer article that we write together over the past few months. And for August, she had some major problems. For one, all of the good, not all of them, all the elections are basically at the very beginning of the month or the very towards the end of the month. And the other issue that she ran into that we talked about is that she had a hard time finding good rising signs during the daytime. So especially at the beginning of the month, the best rising sign seems to be really early in the morning. So this is some of those, not very practical elections that are going to have you waking up, either waking up very early or staying up very late, about 4:30 in the morning. So the first one takes place on August 1st, 2016 at about 4:35-ish in the morning. With about, let's say, 21 Cancer rising, and the moon is at 21 Cancer as well. So the ruler of the ascendant is in its own sign, and it's in the first house conjunct the ascendant. It's applying to a sextile with Jupiter, which is at 22 degrees of Virgo in the third house. So the ruler of the ascendant is applying to a benefic. It's a night chart because the sun is in Leo in the second house with Venus. So it's actually a pretty decent chart for financial matters because it has Venus in the night chart as the most positive planet in the second house, and the ruler of the second house is well placed. And then for a little bit extra juice, she threw the lot of fortune in there in the second house conjunct the sun, which is the ruler of the second. And then finally, we've got Mercury and Virgo in this chart. So we've got a pretty well placed third house on top of that with Mercury and Jupiter both there in the third. So this is the first, essentially, election of August. There's a very similar election on August 3rd at about 4:52 a.m. with late Cancer rising, and now the moon is in the second house. The ruler of the ascendant itself is actually in the second, putting even more emphasis on financial matters. In this chart, it's actually applying to a conjunction with Venus, which is even more positive for second house type activities. And there's another one on August 5th where it's a Leo rising chart. It's at 7:23 in the morning with Leo rising and the sun in Leo in the first whole sign house and Venus on the ascendant. Mercury and Jupiter are in the second house now. The moon is also in the second and it's applying to a conjunction with Jupiter in the second house. There's a little bit of problems because Mars and Saturn are now in early Sagittarius squaring those Virgo placements, but I mean, for the most part, this is the best you're going to come up with at this time in early August, because that Mars-Saturn conjunction really starts messing with everything, especially when all of the planets move into Virgo and there's basically no way to avoid some of those squares. So those are my elections for early August from Lisa, who is actually doing a lot of electional consultations lately, and she's getting quite good at it. So you can check out her services at lisascheim.com. All right. You guys have any comments or questions about those charts?
It makes sense. The end of the month is going to be a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's making the best of the situation.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what electional astrology often comes down to is
totally
making the best out of or squeezing the best chart that you possibly can out of a given situation. And then, of course, there's other factors that come into play, such as the relationship of that chart to the person's natal chart. And that actually came up because somebody, I heard like a criticism from like a Renaissance astrologer last year where they saw what I was doing in terms of recommending elections and said, well, those are mundane elections or something like that. And you really have to, you know, also look at the relationship between the electional chart to the natal chart. But sort of my issue with that is that's to me, that's natal astrology, like looking at where transiting planets are going to be at some point in the future and how they relate to the natal chart. That's something you have to do as part of, you know, a full electional consultation, and it certainly shouldn't be ignored, but it's kind of like a separate, not a completely separate process, but I put that much more in the realm of natal astrology itself in terms of looking at a person's transits, whereas the art of actually, you know, identifying a good standalone chart that really emphasizes certain placements in the chart or really emphasizes certain planets by making them dignified or prominent or something else, that's a whole thing in and of itself that is usually, you know, under the realm of quote unquote electional astrology. I don't know, where have you guys come across that sort of debate before or issue in terms of looking at elections?
I have, primarily in terms of elections for planetary talismans, you know, because all of the old astrological magic is, I wouldn't say it's centered on, but the it's all about electing. It's all about electing the chart to make the cool thing. Right. And it's interesting that you got that feedback from somebody who is working from a Renaissance perspective, because that's actually the feedback I usually get from people who are working from a modern perspective, where they're like, oh, well, the talisman I want is when Jupiter's conjunct my sun, right? And it's like, no, you actually already have a natal chart. You are a talisman of all of those positions. Mm-hmm. Part of the glory is being able to step outside the parameters of your own chart. What's important is that Jupiter's really is in an excellent position, not that it is, you know, right, you know, not that it's right on your nose. And that's part of, I think, the art of relating to transiting positions, is that it's not what you were born under. And that's part of the glory. You know, sometimes transits can help us step outside of our own patterns. You know, we can kind of graft something into our garden that doesn't naturally grow there, at least for a little bit.
Yeah. And that's, it's like a tension in the whole theory in and of itself of like electional astrology versus natal astrology. But it's one that when you start dealing with both branches, you kind of have to find some middle ground between while still giving each their sort of proper due or proper attention.
Yeah, I just to sort of balance or moderate my position, I don't think it's totally worthless and stupid to look at, but I think it's of secondary importance.
The transits to the natal chart?
Yeah, like the way that an election, magical or otherwise, intersects with a natal chart, that's interesting and it's worth looking at, but it's not, I think it's clearly of secondary importance. I don't think that it should be a primary factor, other than like a few deal killers, right? Like if you were gonna, you know, if you're gonna do a talisman for Saturn, for example, don't wait until Saturn's on the degree of your sun to do so, right? Like there are just a few things that are kind of gimmies, but other than that, like it's a secondary concern. It's not primary.
The one way I would kind of bring the two together is, as you said, Austin, more of an in a secondary way. But if I'm doing an election for somebody's wedding, for instance, in addition to all the classic sort of wedding election type things, if it's possible to get the rising sign in the wedding chart to fall in a more favorable house natally, that is, I'd probably consider that rather than do a detailed, like, how are all these transits on the day triggering your chart?
Yeah, sure. I think if you have options like that, if you're like, okay, this is good and I can do Leo rising or Sag rising this day, and Sag rising is better for that person, of course you do Sag rising. But again, that's sort of a...
As you said, it's secondary.
Yeah.
You're not building the whole chart around it, but if you can add that in, it's a nice little icing on the cake, I guess.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's about... it means that the person doesn't have to reach as far to actualize the potentials represented by the election. Some elections require us to kind of reach outside of our natural rhythm a little bit. And you can feel that when you're like, oh, I wouldn't do this naturally now. And that's why you bothered to elect it, is because you wanted something better than what would just probably happen. And so there's that feeling of kind of reaching or, you know, pushing against the walls of habit. That a lot of times is necessary to get good elections. And I think that you don't have to reach as far when you can configure it to the natal.
That's beautiful. It's a lovely way of putting it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that I think we're all on the same page about this in terms of the electional chart being primary and then the natal chart being secondary to some extent, especially at least in the process of actually, you know, doing it. I mean, there's certainly counter arguments that could be made, and I've explored, you know, in certain elections like marriage elections or some career elections, I've certainly brought into account things like zodiac releasing, which can be used to, for example, section out a period of time where a person's going to have a career peak, And sometimes I'll use that as the bounds to which, through which to look for like really good electional charts when that person will also be getting a, having a career peak in order to, you know, release their book or launch their company or something like that. But in terms of the chart itself, it's still, you know, looking for a very good electional chart that can stand on its own to represent this new entity or this new venture that you're like bringing into the world to the same extent of, you know, if somebody was being born at that time, you know, it'd be nice if they had a really good birth chart if they were trying to accomplish some specific thing in their life, let's say. So I don't know. We don't have to, I guess we can move on, but that was a little, it's a little something I've been thinking about for the past year since some of that came up, because doing the electional column, I'm often curious how people perceive and how they respond to or react to some of the elections that I'm putting forward. And that was one of the few instances where I got or heard a little bit of criticism. And I was curious how different astrologers sort of approach that issue, but that might make for a good sort of separate show at some point.
Cool.
All right. So moving on, what are some other major things happening? It looks like,
well, actually I want to back up and get into the meat of some of the things we've already mentioned, because we really have two pretty huge and dominant themes, which are triggered in a variety of ways. One is what Kelly led with, right? It's hot and dry and then cold and dry, right? We have way too much fire, and then we have way too much Virgo, right? And that like just that, the fact that there are going to be four planets in Virgo or three planets in Virgo for a while and then four planets in Virgo, and that we've got a minimum of four planets in fire signs until the sun goes into Virgo. And those are not friendly planets in fire signs. It's both malefics and Uranus. And then, you know, the sun's great in Leo, but we might not need more.
This heat. Year we don't need the extra heat.
And so, you know, as I'm saying this, We just had the sun moved into Leo just a few days ago over here, and which put a lot of, put five planets in fire signs. And so we had like 30,000 acres burn in LA over the weekend, like up north, I think it was. I looked up, I went outside, which I do every couple days. And I was like, oh, there's a giant smoke cloud. I was like, oh, I wonder if there's a fire a couple blocks over. No, it was miles. It was, you know, 50 miles away. But there, and the entire sky that night was filled with ash clouds. A friend of mine said he went out, you know, he went outside to go somewhere in his car, and his car had a thin dusting of ash. And he lives in the middle of the city. That's part of what too much fire looks like.
Sure.
Huge.
You know, and you know, on a humoral level, or on a temperament level, you know, LA is already pretty hot and dry, and so these transiting conditions obviously caused an excess and an inflammation of tissues.
That's a really good point, though, Austin, because I think that's how people are going to experience August, depending on their internal, I guess, individual temperament or qualities. You know, if you tend to be a fairly hot, dry type of person, this is going to be like kindling, you know, in a hot bush or something, like in the forest. Whereas if you tend to be more of a cooler type, you actually might benefit from the heat because it can be activating.
So I'm a cooler type. Well, actually, I am warm and moist.
Well, you could probably do with some drying out there.
I don't mind.
Of a moist person.
No, but it's too much. Like literally, I was really looking forward to the sun going into Leo, and then I instantly felt miserable. Like literally that night, I was like, "This is going to be awesome." And I was like, "Ugh."
And so it's just too extreme, right? Yeah, it's like the heat of summer. It's too hot.
Yeah, it's just too much. And so, you know, there are coping strategies for that. Like literally, taking a bath. Taking a bath, which is both moistening the body, but you're also, that's what you're perceiving. You're experiencing water, and what we experience changes our mind, which is equally important to balance. You know, you were leading with some of the dryness on a mental, emotional level, and how dryness separates us. It makes us unable to connect to things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if our bodies were not, primarily moist on the inside. You know, if your blood dried up, it just becomes this kind of iron oxide red powder, or and then it darkens, right? And you can't, you need rivers of liquid blood. You can't have powder going through your veins. It's, you know, the tissues are unable to communicate without those rivers of water within you.
Without the moisture.
Yeah.
So bathing and maybe oil, coconut oil, olive oil, stuff to moisten things.
Yeah. Well, and you know, another thing that I noticed was just with fire, fire is both active and instantly reactive. You know, fire, mm-hmm. when a fire catches, you know, it's instant. Like something is either on fire or it's not. You know, we've probably all had the experience of like trying to start a fire in the fireplace or trying to light something with a match. And you can heat things, but then the combustion is, it occurs in a single instant, right?
That's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Thanks. And so, you know, I noticed myself, I was like reacting to things. I was like, fire. I was like, oh, this person's in my way in traffic. I hate them and want them to die. And I was like, no, I really don't want them to die. But that, you know, I noticed that with all of the fire getting more reactive. And that's certainly not helpful in today's political climate. It's just, you know, it's more of the same, you know, more of the same going, you know, rushing to extremes like we're talking about with Saturn and Sag.
Sure. And a sort of quickness or impatience yes. associated with it.
Impatience. Yeah. Fire is not a patient element. Water is patient. Earth is eternally, nearly eternally patient.
Patient.
You know, air can like fidget for a while, but you know, but fire is now. Fire is
like immediately, if not sooner.
Fire is, I see it and it's real. You know, I see it and instantly I'm reacting to it. I'm moving towards it. I'm moving away from it. Fire literally has no capability for stasis.
It's got to be it's gonna be interesting how everyone responds to it, I think, personally. And probably, again, what we saw in July, that difference between what happens at a macro level and what's happening at a personal level.
Yeah. Well, and so what do you think about too many things in Virgo? How does that strike y'all?
You go, Chris.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say the cooling is going to be welcome, to go from heat to cool. To slow things down a little. I mean, that's really it's a change of pace. You know, you're saying fire is so reactive and so quick. At least to have some of the planets maybe being a bit more thoughtful or a bit more measured. Maybe not. The tendency though, of course, with excess Virgo is to be overly analytical, and that can be.
Well, and just worry.
Too much worrying. That's the problem with mutable.
Worry often takes the guise of thinking about things. You're not really thinking, you're worrying.
You're just, you're stressing yourself out, basically.
Yeah,
and just worrying about those small things rather than the big picture.
Yeah, and also worrying about things that you can't change. Not an efficient allocation of energy. I also feel like, you know, we have, towards the end of the month, we actually have a rather dramatic stellium of Mercury, Jupiter, and Venus at the end of Virgo. And it's worth noting that Virgo is the one sign where both Venus and Jupiter are very unhappy. Mercury's just fine there. But, you know, with Virgo, you're getting into the details. You're looking at the actual results of things rather than what you hoped they would be. And that late in the sign speaks to outcomes, right, rather than initiations. I mean, it's the very end of a mutable sign. And this is also the very end of Jupiter's time in Virgo. And so I think there's going to be a lot of looking at the results, right? Like, oh, this is what we got out of this. And that emphasis on, the emphasis on the end point of processes is also spoken to by the images for that last decan of Virgo, which are in a lot of different texts over quite a range of time, generally show, how do I put this without being too dark? They generally show dead bodies. they show an elderly man or woman who's become infirmed. But you also see in earlier text where there's some Egyptian elements still preserved, you see a body being prepared for mummification, which, you know, we might read as just funeral, but you got to remember the meaning of that is moving from the temporary to the eternal. It's a transition from, you know, the world of, how should we say, fragile flesh into a world where you're clothed in more durable spirit. But it's nonetheless a transition. And in my work with that, I associate that, that decan very strongly with the idea of inheritances or legacies. Like, what have you left behind? What is the process of your life left behind? And looking very far to the end of processes, and the consequences unto the seventh generation rather than, you know, what happens in 2 hours. And so, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of consequences of the storylines that we've been living for most for this year, or maybe even more, highlighted. It's like, okay, this is what we ended up with. And then, you know, that might be lovely, or it might be kind of depressing, or it's probably, as life is, a combination of both. But there's a very like end point. And then Mercury stations retrograde right there, the very end of Virgo. It's like, okay, now we're going to think over this and sort out what this process has left us with.
Right.
Very much sorting the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Once it's harvest time, you don't get to water the plants again, right? That it's done. The growing season is over.
It's interesting that whole lineup is the same lineup, or it's very similar to the one that happened earlier in the summer last year, where you had a bunch of planets cluster up at the end of Leo.
Yeah. It was the same three, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was that, you know, beautiful lineup that you could see in the sky. At the time that ended up like coinciding in the US with like the Supreme Court decision, for example, that legalized gay marriage, same-sex marriage.
That was the Venus Jupiter thing earlier, like two months earlier.
Right. Yeah, in June, right?
Right. I don't think that triple lineup was until August.
Maybe I'm just thinking of the Venus Jupiter conjunction.
Right, it was, but Jupiter and Venus made a couple of those because of Venus's retrograde.
Gotcha.
It was the untroubled one that was earlier, where we had the decision, and then that was the thing about that last one, the Jupiter Mercury Venus at the end of Leo, is that was all perfectly square Saturn, so that was less pleasant. That was actually where we saw a lot of pushback against the earlier Jupiter Venus conjunction court ruling.
Right. Yeah, which is something we had kind of anticipated because we had noticed the difference between, you know, how easy and like not having any hard aspects that first conjunction was versus what was happening later on.
Right, right.
Due to the Venus retrograde. So anyways, it just reminded me of that, but it's in a completely different context because now it's taking place in Virgo rather than Leo, and just what the different scenery in that instance, you know, might imply in terms of what's going on with that. So I don't know if you guys, this is sort of broadly, maybe not really related, but I've been really entertained, and I found it funny. One of the Saturn Neptune square things that's been happening over the past month has been the release of Pokemon Go.
Totally. Oh my goodness!
Totally.
Yes.
And the big thing about it is it's I love the what it's called augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that people are, you know, everyone's walking around with their phones and sort of like interacting with or playing this game and interacting with things that aren't necessarily there and that you can only see through the screen of the phone. But I thought that was a really great, because I've been more focused, you know, over the past year, and I keep coming back to this theme of like virtual reality as part of the Saturn Neptune square with all of the virtual reality headsets coming out earlier this year. I didn't really even think of this other thing that's sort of a parallel development with augmented reality. But I thought that was a great like keyword or good phrase for Saturn square Neptune, I felt like.
Yeah, no, it's hallucinating all over things.
it's very weird, which makes sense.
You know, what's funny to me is how I've seen, I don't play Pokemon Go and I'm not going to, but I've seen all of these apocalyptic reactions to it. like it's somehow, you know, the bell ringing in the end times, which is really strange to me. It's like, everybody's playing video games before, they were just in their house.
Well, that's been the big thing. So my stepson, who's sort of a 21 year, I think he's 21 now, he loves, you know, video games and all that stuff. And the one thing, so of course, he and his girlfriend are mad for it as soon as it came to Canada. But he even said that it's got them out of the house, which we were happy about because they're a bit pasty, you know, like many young kids who play video games or even adults who play video games. You're indoors a lot.
Sure.
So he said it's got him outside. And we live in a small town outside Toronto, Ontario, and usually on a weeknight by about 9:30, the main streets are dead. You know, even the restaurants are kind of shutting up. It's not a late night kind of party town. But my husband and I were out walking. It's summer here, beautiful sunshine, kind of late evening. And all of a sudden, the streets are packed. There's like 50 or 60 younger kids, like teens, 20s, and they're all walking around. So they've all got their phones out. They're all obviously playing Pokemon, but they are outside. So there's something to be said for that, I guess. And maybe that's the Sadgy being on the go.
Well, it's literally a quest. It has that that Saturn and Sag extremism. You've got to catch them all.
You
don't be happy with catching some. You catch them all, right? You take it to an extreme. Back to, which reminds me of where something I was going to say earlier, when we were talking about Saturn and Sag and sort of extremism. One thing I see with natal Saturn and Sages is they feel like they have to do something all the way. Like,
yes.
they feel really uncomfortable with like flirting with a subject and learning a little bit about it. They're like, no, I have to master it or I'm garbage. I'm not even going to try.
Yeah. I'm all in or I'm nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen that be an issue for people where it's like, no, actually your life would be a lot easier if you just spent an hour a day doing this and then did some other things, where they're like, no, I have to, it has to be 6 hours a day and I have to be the best ever or it's garbage. I'm not even going to try.
Right. Yeah. That's a real Saturn theme in like whatever area sometimes that it falls in. That can be a major theme.
Yeah. Saturn seems to like, one of the things that it does in signs is it ossifies their significations, right? Where it's like Saturn, Scorpio, no, you're stuck in Scorpio land. Like, no, we have to think negatively about this. We have to like be paranoid. Saturn in Pisces, like trapped in dreamland. Saturn in Aries, right? No, we have to act right now. You know, that it, in that sort of, it's almost like a little bit of a prison that Saturn creates for people in the various signs, is feeling like they have to do that and not in, you know, sometimes burying people and they forget that they have, that these are choices, that they can, you know, activate or whatever.
Sure. So let's see, transition. I'm not sure if we're supposed to transition at this point or.
Well, no, let's talk about Saturn and Neptune, because that's like half of the month is about things hitting Saturn and Neptune.
Yeah, it's just this huge sort of never ending sequence of inner planets hitting that square, basically, right?
Right, it never ends.
Yes.
So, very, because I'm just looking at it. So, and I should state, because this is a good month to do this, but it's like what I'm doing. Well, I guess people have already seen this if you've seen the video versions. It's like, this is what's awesome about having like a program like Solar Fire, which I'm going to again plug, because not only they're sponsoring us this month, but also because that's literally the program that I'm using every time we're doing these forecast episodes, because it has this awesome feature where you can animate the chart and move it forward and backwards in time. So just animating it, you know, and moving it forward one day every click in order to see when some of these planets are hitting that square. So it looks like when you start out the month, that Mercury is like the first planet that makes it into Virgo in early August. And then it hits the square with Saturn first at 9 degrees around August 6th. And then it hits the opposition with Neptune. Right around the same time, we have Venus ingress into Virgo. And then it catches up just a few days later, so that by, what is it, like August 13th, 14th, 15th, Venus squares Saturn and then opposes Neptune. Then later in the month, a few weeks later, we have the Sun ingress into Virgo. And then by
And the eclipse locks that in. The new moon / solar eclipse happens as the sun is squaring Saturn and opposing Neptune.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So that
eclipse. And the nodes are, and as implied.
And very tight to the nodes.
Yeah, and the nodes, they do a lot of things, but one thing you can say is that they things have more impact when they are on the nodes. They shake things up.
Yeah, definitely. They can intensify things. I mean, that used to be, that's in modern times, usually Pluto's like the planet that sort of intensifies everything for modern astrologers. But for many traditional astrologers, it was the nodes, especially the North Node, that originally had that sort of function of magnifying things or blowing things up.
Mm-hmm. I think they both do that.
Well, and that's that's actually an interesting question, just because the South Node is so close to Neptune, what it will be doing. So will it be magnifying? I mean, because I know it seems like there's different traditional approaches where one of them was that they're both magnifying things. One of them, though, was this idea that the South Node somehow decreases or like draws power away from the planet. I mean, where do you see that fitting in?
So generally, I would say yes, it draws power away from that planet, but that power doesn't disappear. Mm. In some ways, I see the North Node is stealing from the South Node. Like the power gets, the South Node in Pisces and the North Node in Virgo, it's sort of like the ocean of Pisces is being vacuumed. And then some of that potency is being given to Virgo. Mm-hmm. And it's like the dragon's tail is like a plug that you stick into the wall. And then its head is where that power is exported. And right. So I think it moves power around, and it's sort of like decrease, increase. But you can see the decrease, increase in the movement of significations, I think very clearly in natal charts. On a mundane level, I would just say that it churns, destabilizes, and magnifies the amount of change on a given axis for a period of time.
Sure.
The other way, I totally agree, Austin, the idea of the shifting the energy around it. It's sort of coming away from the South Node and being amplified around the North. The other way that I'd heard the South Node explained, and this was relatively recently by a friend who's a Vedic astrologer, that the South Node has a spiritualizing influence. And so it, in some ways, I see it that it sort of changes the focus of a planet that's on the South Node from more material or mundane matters to perhaps more esoteric, which absolutely. In the material world can look like a drain or a depletion because that's not what the focus is for that period of time.
I absolutely agree with that. And I would say that the action that spiritualizes things is usually something we can liken to a fast or a cleanse.
Oh, beautiful.
Another key signification of the nodes in Vedic astrology is their association with poison. Mm-hmm. And that's literally what happens. Like if you go into a sweat lodge or you go into a fast, your body's all of the poison comes to the surface. The South Node is also associated strongly with the past and the North Node with the future in Vedic astrology. And so, the poisons that are in your body were of course accumulated in the past. And so it brings all this stuff up, and so one of the sort of simple things we can say about the co-presence of the South Node and Neptune, which has been ongoing for this whole year, is Neptune South Node, toxic fantasies. And I think toxic fantasies have been in the headlines pretty much every day for the entire year.
Yes.
That's mostly what our political landscape is here.
That's what I was thinking, but I'm like, can I say that or am I going to annoy people?
No, it's a lot of, and what's funny is it's like different toxic fantasies that hate each other fighting.
Yes.
Right.
And that Neptune South Node, it is, like, as you said, co-present, it's close. It actually doesn't become exact until November, about the middle of the month. So it is, it's not going anywhere just yet.
No, yeah, and so this is, with the South Node moving in, with the South Node and Neptune moving into perfect conjunction, it's just an intensification of a theme that's been present for some time. And of course, it plays in with the whole Neptune Saturn square. And, you know, Chris, I do want to pat you on the back for bringing up Pokemon Go in terms of that Saturn Neptune. That is perfect. And it's funny because it's literally like the compromise or the halfway point between VR and normal R.
Right, exactly. It's an interface between like literally something that's not real. It's like a fantasy sort of reality that's happening out there versus like, you know, people are actually walking around the streets or walking around parks and stuff and are interacting with the actual world or like hiking and stuff, but they're also doing this other thing. It's a really brilliant sort of concise manifestation of that square.
Yeah. And it's also, it's just sort of a brilliant metaphor for life for a lot of people right now. Right. There's what's actually, for example, there's what's really happening in my life. And then there's Facebook.
Yes.
Right. Which is kind of real, but is also kind of not real, especially when you take a few days off. You're like, oh, you know what? There were all these, you know, there's all this controversy and a bunch of people I know ended up arguing with each other. And you know what? I missed it and nothing happened. it didn't really end up mattering, but it sure seemed like it mattered when you're watching one of these, you know, poop shows play out, you're like, oh, this is really important.
Sure. And, so, I mean, I don't want to get too much into politics cause that's so dicey. It's so like treacherous, at this point. I do want to give a shout out to Patrick Watson, whose prophetic visionary powers of data collection are now verging on the strange and eerie, because he actually got the birth certificate ahead of time for Tim Kaine, who ended up being Hillary Clinton's vice presidential pick. And he had the foresight to figure out that Kaine was probably going to be the guy, and to also find out that he lived in an open state, and to get a copy of his birth certificate before he was even announced. So he's done that twice now in the past two elections. Last election in 2012, he did that with Paul Ryan, who was the Republican pick. We published it about a month before he was announced on the political astrology blog. So he's kind of on a roll here.
So what does Tim Kaine's chart look like?
It's actually interesting, because one of the few things that I didn't look at it very closely, but one of the things that I did notice and I found very interesting and not necessarily insightful, but just really interesting parallel, is he had Aries rising with Mars, the ruler of the ascendant, which is such an important planet in the chart for most forms of astrology. He had the ruler of the ascendant in Capricorn in the 10th whole sign house.
Wow.
So that's interesting.
That's 16 Cap.
Oh my.
Yeah. And
getting nailed by Pluto.
Yeah.
You know, that quick side note, some years ago when the Twilight book movie phenomenon was happening, I attempted to look up that person's chart because it was
the author Stephanie Meyer.
Yes, because she's not very good at writing, and I was like, that's very strange for a person who's not very good at writing to become an internationally best-selling author. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that looked like. And if I didn't have a birth time, but just you know, the day, it was Pluto going over her sun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was, you know, I'm sure it was absolutely crazy. Cause I, you know, I doubt that she thought she was the best writer ever and would no doubt achieve international fame, right? She was probably just writing the things that she liked and hoping some people would like it. And so she just gets rocketed into an entirely foreign world and has to adapt to it. And I see that sometimes with Pluto transits, where sometimes it looks like crazy success or a giant leap forward that is nonetheless very disorienting for the person.
Well, the other piece too, so I've just jumped on Patrick's website. Have you got the data there, Chris?
Yeah, it looks like, and the other thing is he got, he was submitting his data through like Nick or through me before, but they actually, astro.com, he actually applied and he's like, why don't you guys make me a collector? And so Patrick's now an official collector on Astro Data Bank, which is pretty awesome since he's a great data collector. But they've already got the entry up. You can find it on Astro Data Bank. It's February 26th, 1958 at 7:59 a.m. So it's a nice exact time. That'd be a little lame if it was like 8 o'clock straight up, but it's not. St. Paul, Minnesota. So it's for for Aries rising, according to Solar Fire.
And so in addition to that Pluto-Mars sort of situation, he's got the sun at 7 Pisces, which I'm pretty sure is going to get hit by a nice juicy eclipse at the end of February 2017.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we've got the very dramatic Pisces eclipse that it'll be, I think it's at 8 Pisces.
And just to go back to my earlier point, what I found interesting, because I didn't spend very much time looking at his chart, but I did notice that he had the ruler of the ascendant in the 10th whole sign house, because that's one of the first things that I look at in any chart. And that immediately struck me as interesting, because in the chart that I use for Hillary Clinton with Scorpio rising, she has Scorpio rising and Mars ruler of the ascendant in Leo in the 10th whole sign house. So the two people on that ticket have the same placement, which I just found really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and he's having his second Saturn return. He's a Saturn in Sag.
Saturn 24 Sag. So that'll be hitting in January, February, which is inauguration, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wanted to give a, since Patrick has come up, can I give a quick shout out to another blog post that he wrote?
Yeah, please do.
The What Astrology Would Be Like If Millennials Invented / Ruined It. If you want to laugh, it is hilarious. He basically looks at the different planets. It's almost like he's trying to explain astrology to, I guess, millennials. And he's trying to say what each of the planets represent. And he does it by correlating it to things they'd be familiar with, like their selfie picture or having to, you know, do adulting type stuff. So I thought, as much as it's hilarious, it's also actually quite informative. So I definitely would recommend that.
That was a great, great post. Somebody, he actually got pushback. Some millennial like got pissed off on Reddit at him.
Patrick is a millennial.
He was talking about his own generation.
He's not a cranky old man talking about the kids on his lawn.
Well, not actually, at all.
I mean, and by the way, that's literally been happening with Pokemon Go, which is hilarious. People are like, literally, get these kids off my lawn.
Well, because the street we live on, we've got friends that live 5 houses down, and they have a Pokemon gym at the front of their house. So there's constantly a group of younger kids. I mean, I think they're kids. Maybe they're 25. I don't know. That's what happens when you get a bit older. I'm just hanging out because they're doing all that, I don't know, catching things and stuff. So the grumpy old people on their lawn, it's hilarious.
Yeah, but that was a great article. I thought it was good, and it was very tongue-in-cheek, like most of his articles were, even though it contains an actual serious underlying point.
I think you could learn something from it, in addition to having a good laugh.
Sure. It was just funny seeing some, I think what I'm interpreting is millennials, like, misinterpreted on Reddit or somewhere, on Reddit, on the astrology page, so reddit.com/r/astrology, and downvoted it, or sort of like argued he had to defend it a little bit against some random people. But that's such is the nature of humor that's often,
it won't appeal for everyone. That's true.
Yeah, that often happens in the astrological community, where sometimes if somebody writes, because I've run into this before, if you write like a sarcastic or like a a satirical article, sometimes people get really up in arms about it because they take it, you know, dead seriously.
People don't like to be made fun of.
Right. People don't like to be made fun of, and astrology is something that people take so seriously. And obviously the three of us take it very seriously, that sometimes they don't always like feel comfortable like dropping that for the sake of like making a joke or something like that. So
it's true.
Anyway, he's got some other good articles as well. So PatrickWatsonAstrologer.com. He also got a bunch of other birth data for other politicians recently, including the Castro brothers, not from Cuba, but the two politicians in the U.S., which is really interesting because they're up-and-coming politicians and whose birth data might end up being important in the future. And I guess we're coming up on, it's going to be election time very soon. So I guess we're going to be actually forced to start talking about that before too long. And I should probably start putting together some sort of episode where it's time to start analyzing that stuff.
Yeah, you can have Watson on for that.
He'll be great.
Yeah.
And so this episode was brought to you by Patrick Watson.
By Patrick Watson.
His generous donations have made all the difference.
Right. his generous donation of dank memes over the course of the past month has kept us going, kept us sane during very tough times.
I really needed to know what Bay meant, and he was able to clarify that for me.
Right. All right. So, are there major things that we haven't gotten to yet? I have two more electional charts to get to, so I could throw those in right now if we're at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. So, end of the month election. So, as I said, there's this whole gap in the middle of the month for electional charts, but then towards the end of the month, once you get that sort of pile up of planets in Virgo, there are some elections that you could use to take advantage of some of those placements. It's a little bit dicey, because then that means that you're also using electional charts right around the time that the Mars Saturn conjunction is going exact in Sagittarius. But nonetheless, it's like, if you have to do something in late August, these would probably be some charts to use. So one of them that Lisa found was on August 23rd, 2016, and at about 11:04 p.m., so about 11 o'clock p.m., with 22 Taurus rising and Venus in Virgo, which is not typically ideal, but in a night chart and applying to a conjunction with Jupiter and Mercury in the fifth whole sign house. So the other thing that the chart has going for it is that the moon is in Taurus in the first house, exalted and applying to a trine with Venus and Jupiter. So the ruler of the ascendant, while not sort of classically well-placed by sign-based dignity, is otherwise pretty excellently placed by house, being in the fifth house, in terms of its configuration with both Jupiter and applying to a close conjunction with it, and in terms of also applying to Mercury, its domicile lord, or at least being co-present with it. And then the moon is also relatively well-placed in its application to both benefics while being exalted and in a good house.
Yeah, it is conjunct Algol.
The moon at 18 Taurus.
It's not
18. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong day. I apologize.
It's not there yet. Come on. Give us.
Fixed stars do not have a 7-degree orb. I was looking at the wrong day. My apologies.
This is actually something, I'm so glad this chart came up, because this is what's happening very close to the Mars-Saturn conjunction. It's a little bit of the saving grace, is that the moon is in Taurus applying to Venus and Jupiter.
Yeah, totally. And that Venus-Jupiter conjunction itself is in a superior sign-based square, which is called overcoming Mars and Saturn. So I really feel like, and on top of that, Jupiter also has reception with Mars and Saturn because they're in Sagittarius. So Jupiter is aspecting them while they're in its sign. So I do feel like, and I'm hoping that superior configuration of both benefics helps to really mitigate some of that Mars-Saturn conjunction, so that whatever the, either in terms of mitigating it, so that whatever the events are that coincide with it that might be experienced as subjectively negative, either in terms of world events or in terms of personal events, are sort of mitigated so that they're less bad or not as bad as they could be, or that you have otherwise, what happens sometimes is this sort of saving grace where you'll have something really bad happen, but then something really good will happen at the same time that kind of balances things out.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the things that is nice about that time period, is you're not just getting a Mars-Saturn conjunction happening in the sky at the end of August, but you're also getting a Venus-Jupiter conjunction happening around the same time as well.
Yeah, and
I think that's very optimistic.
Of course you do, Austin.
Well, let me be clear. I think that you can totally get away with that in like an election where you have where you get to pick the rising and all that.
Right. Right.
I don't think. It's Jupiter and Venus in the place where they're both weakest, with Mercury stationing retrograde. I don't think it's actually that much help on a world level. I think the question is, what goes down in flames under that Mars, Saturn, Antares? Hopefully it will be, people who deserve it. That's my hope, is that wrath is visited upon those who most deserve it. And that's, Antares likes to punish the hubristic. And so
it does. I mean, as one of the royal stars, it always has that caution against, seeking revenge or what have you. acting without integrity.
Yeah, well, and a lot of it is, you know, rise without integrity. You know, pulling down those who've gone too far or too fast.
Yes.
Who have attained power that they do not wield wisely.
I just thought it was potentially helpful that the moon is so dignified at basically when that conjunction is happening, that we've got the Taurus moon.
Yeah, well, but it might just delay the significations until like a day or two later when they're still right on top of each other and the moon's in Gemini getting pounded.
Yeah, I was hoping maybe not, because it only heats up after that. You're right, once the moon moves into Gemini. But anyway, Chris, you might have had other elections you wanted to share.
So there was just that one, and then there's one more like a day later, which is August 24th with Cancer rising and the moon at 20 Taurus. This is at 2:21 a.m., so very early in the morning.
Just a few hours later.
Yeah, basically just a few hours later, because it's just that, you know, there's that triple conjunction of Venus, Jupiter, Mercury. The moon is also well-placed in Taurus, where it's not being aspected by a hard aspect by Mars and Saturn, and it's applying to a trine with Venus and Jupiter. So you've got this few-hour window of let's take advantage of that, and the way to do that is to make either Venus or the moon the ruler of the ascendant, to really put the focal point of the chart on those positive placements. So 2:21 in the morning, August 24th, Cancer rising, about 12 Cancer rising, the moon exalted in Taurus in the 11th whole sign house in a night chart, applying to a trine with Venus at 22 degrees of Virgo and Jupiter at 26 Virgo.
Yeah, well, and that's a nice mutually received Venus-Moon thing, too.
Yes, because the moon is actually in Venus's sign, and it's applying to it, so it's an actual, using the strict version of reception, it's actually in reception or being received by Venus. Well,
and yeah, exactly. The moon is a triplicity lord of Earth signs.
Sure. So yeah, so that's the other election. That's a pretty good one for like 11th house and third house activities, I would say, because of the ruler of the ascendant being in the 11th, and because the moon is applying to the ruler of the 11th by a very favorable and very flowing aspect. It's probably better for the 11th house person in some sense than it is for the. Or it's probably better for the person initiating the action, which is the first house person, than it is for the 11th house person, since the 11th house person is Venus and Virgo. But things are otherwise positive, so it'd be good for, you know, striking favorable alliances or connections or friendships with people that are associated with the 11th house at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if anybody has any alliances or things to strike, do it at 2 o'clock
midnight
in the morning.
Midnight councils.
Yes. Right.
So I want to jump back to Mars Saturn, because I just said some things about you know, death and destruction. So there'll probably be some of that. It probably won't happen to you. But what does happen with Mars Saturn conjunctions is a lot of times you have to work really hard. You know, Mars Saturn will push you toward, you know, towards exhaustion. Like there's a lot of times I find deadlines are looming. Things have to get done. This has to get locked down. Which isn't, you know, which is not, flaming destruction, but a lot of times it's a stressful period. And people get a little worn down or burnt out. And, you know, when we're compressed and pushed to action like that, whatever our stress responses are will tend to be more evident. And so, you know, just get through that period of time, you know, hit your deadlines, you know, endure stressed out people around you, and it'll be over. You know, that like for most people, it's just going to be managing a period of greater stress rather than the sky falling.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's a pretty practical sort of manifestation in terms of what stuff like this often usually ends up being like in terms of the lives of like everyday people, just in terms of feeling a period of greater stress or tension or something like that, rather than, you know, being involved in some horrible tragedy or something like that.
Right. Like, so the last time there was a Mars Saturn conjunction, which was in summer of 2014, Ebola spread all over Western Africa. And Robin Williams killed himself, and ISIS metastasized explosively across the Middle East. But You know, and, but I was really stressed out about a publication deadline. You know, like, yes, like some bad things will happen in the world somewhere, but like, and yeah, that was really stressful for me, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't get Ebola or beheaded by ISIS, and the vast majority of people didn't. And so, you know, we need to, if we're going to look at these things, yes, like we can be compassionate and identify with the people who are victims of these particularly nasty periods, but we got to remember the other 7 billion people mostly just had a bad week, right? It's, you know, and catastrophizing, which is a habit that a lot of people have, and astrologers can sometimes accidentally exacerbate, doesn't make anything better, right?
No.
The sky is not falling.
The one thing I wanted to offer on that note too, Austin, was, you know, we're hearing a lot about how this conjunction's happening on Antares, which is this fairly intense fixed star. And one of the more maybe practical or accessible interpretations that I've heard along the way around Antares is that it's a star, because it is the star linked to autumn in the Northern Hemisphere, it's about closing down cycles. So it is about sort of marking the transition or the ending, like the necessary endings. So there may be something in this Mars, Saturn, Antares lineup around becoming clear, becoming conscious to end something, you know, either getting the clarity mentally or taking the action that closes down or, you know, separates, to go back to that dry idea, you know, from things that are no longer sustainable or that are no have outlived their usefulness, I guess.
Yeah, I also, because it has a very fiery nature, I think it might also be like digging deep to find the fuel to bring something to its rightful end.
And rightful end, yeah.
And just to clarify for people, Antares is associated with fall because it culminates when the sun sets in the fall, right? It's going to be in September. As soon as the sun sets, Antares is going to be right at the top of the sky.
Overhead. So in the midheaven position, for instance.
Right. People and that's where the association comes from.
Yeah.
So
that's August.
Yeah. Well, and I just one final note about culminating, right? The dynamics that we see, especially during that last third or 10 days of August, are going to lead directly into September. And September is the conclusion of a lot of different storylines. And yes. So this is like the climax right before, I would say August is the climax right before the conclusion. We get our last Saturn-Neptune square in September. We get our last solar eclipse in Virgo, our last lunar eclipse in Pisces, where Jupiter moves into, Jupiter moves into a new sign. It's done with Virgo. And at the very end of September, we'll have Mars leaving Sagittarius and being totally done with that space. So there are a lot of storylines that come to an end in September. And we're, you know, August is the sort of on-ramp to that period of conclusions.
That makes a lot of sense.
So we'll have a lot to talk about next month.
Indeed.
Yeah,
I think that the news will be very interesting by the time that we meet to speak about September.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, hopefully slightly better than the last month, but probably no promises there.
No, we don't want to oversell it.
Sure.
No, well, and the story, you know, the storylines that are... you know, that we're already pretty far into, like, you know, this season of the World Show has been, it's not going to be resolved with handholding.
And there's no kumbaya we're all going to sing at the end of this.
No.
All right. Well, that brings us, so we're at just over 90 minutes now. So I think we've covered the forecast pretty well. What are you guys doing after this? You have things coming up. Kelly, you're going to San Francisco like today.
I have to teach a class, and then I have to pack, and then I have to get to the airport all within about 16 hours.
Wow. Okay.
It's going to be full. I know, but it's good. I'm looking forward to it. I love the West Coast. Those of you who heard me, maybe seen me on my blog or even just hearing me, obviously I'm Australian by birth. So anything that puts me near the Pacific Ocean is happy days.
Yeah, that makes sense. be a lot more similar climate-wise compared to
totally. Them. Although it's pretty juicy and warm here. Mm. And a lot of travel for me in August, and then I've got my next online class starting up in September, so that'll be something I'm preparing for as well.
And what was that again?
My next online class is actually on relationships. So we're going to be covering a bunch of different techniques and ideas about how to do relationship compatibility. And that's a 6-week class studying the first week of September. And as long as you've got some background, you already understand things like aspects and have some familiarity with things like transits or some basic predictive stuff, you know, anyone's welcome to join.
Awesome. That sounds good.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Well, I'm going to be starting up my month-long fundamentals class on dignity. And so that's going to be on the 20th of August. And so if people are confused by the traditional five-level layer cake of essential dignity, we're going to be going through it, you know, piece by piece. And we'll also talk about, you know, the difference between essential and accidental dignity and what that actually looks like in charts, not just the technical structure, because it can be a little confusing if you just memorize the ideas and assign point values to them, but don't look at what actually happens. So.
Awesome. That sounds great as well. Is there anything outside of your work that either of you is like looking forward to coming up?
I'm going to Paris.
What?
Nice.
When are you doing that?
In August.
Okay. For sightseeing pleasure?
Just for a holiday. Yeah, I'm so excited. I haven't been to Europe in like 10 years. So my husband is fluent French speaking. So we're going to go and have some good wine, good food, and you just enjoy whatever Paris has to offer. If anyone has any tips, feel free to let me know. I'm a very bad trip planner.
That sounds amazing. Well, you should meet up with, like Lynn Bell or somebody while you're in town.
I think we have a dinner planned, actually. Another astrology friend of mine, Yasmin Boland, who's out of Sydney but now lives in London. We've got dinner planned, and I think that Lynn will be involved with that. So I'm really looking forward to catching up with those girls too.
Awesome. Great. Cool. And Austin, what are you doing?
I'm going to be locked in writing prison.
Writing mode?
The writing cave.
Yes. I've just got a lot to get done. That Mars Saturn is square my natal Saturn by a degree. So.
I mean, it's better than.
It's going to be really interesting when we get together at the end of August, because you and I basically have some very similar things in our natal charts. So. But we both have a very different August lined up.
Yeah, we do. Well, we have different house structure and
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice that you're not like this is the time of the year where you'd start frantically working on the almanac if you were still publishing that yearly, right?
Yeah. Well, and I would say, Kelly, one of the differences between our charts is the I have an applying Mars Saturn opposition.
Oh, so, yeah.
And you don't.
I do not.
And so, yeah, Mars Saturn stuff always triggers me. Like, it's always like, okay, you know, into the foundry.
Yes. And you love it there, though. You're very productive with it.
Kind of. It's sort of that, like,
a love-hate thing.
Yeah. You know, like, when you're like, oh, I love going to the gym and feeling excruciating pain. You know, it's that sort of, like, masochistic joy in certain kinds of labor that people develop. Or like, oh, you know, I come home from Kung Fu class and my arms are covered with bruises. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And Kate's like, you're sick.
Yes, I'm with Kate. What are you doing, Chris? What's on for you in August? You going to be in the writing cave too?
Yeah, I will be sequestered away in the writing cave. I have a stack of about 300 papers I need to go through to review of filling in citations in the book. I'm also doing a literature review to do one last read through of every Hellenistic text, every translation of Hellenistic text that I have in order to dot all of my I's and cross all of my T's. And I'm going to try and push to bring this manuscript project to a close before too long. I'm going to try and not crowdsource, but I want to put out there the design I have for my book cover. And if there's any other like talented artists that are good with InDesign or Photoshop that feel like giving it a crack to do a rendition or a different like version of my book cover, I think I might sort of do that in order to get a few different options for it before I finalize and settle on one, even though I already have a design that I feel pretty good about. I'd like to see what other people think or what other people would do with it. But I'm actually moving into that stage where I need to start seriously thinking about layout and design and some of those things, because it's getting there.
So exciting. I think we're all going to have a party and have cake when this book gets birthed.
Yeah, launch parties are a thing, Chris.
Oh, no, I'm going to go crazy. Like, this is, I've been everything. It's nice. It's almost nice. In some ways, I'm annoyed that, you know, I've been lecturing on Hellenistic astrology since 2006, 2007. And in some ways, I'm annoyed that I'm only now coming out with the book, because I feel like I've already lectured on like everything. So, you know, I just got an invite to a conference next year and I have to come up with two new lectures, and then plus that, two new lectures for UAC in a few years to submit. And I'm struggling a little bit to figure out what I'm going to present that's going to be not just a sort of variation of something that I've done already. But on the other hand, I've also learned a lot about, you know, like marketing and like what you have to do to put yourself out there and where you need to send stuff like books to get reviews and so that more people see it. And I'm just going to go sort of nuts with a media blitz as soon as this book is out. So you guys have not, you guys are going to be sick of this book by the time I'm done promoting it. But it's going to be really good.
We're going to be so proud and happy for you.
Yeah, it's like 600 pages at this point, and I haven't put a single actual chart wheel or diagram in. So we're running into a little bit of a problem with space issues at this point, and I'm starting to look into larger formats, and it looks like it's going to be a larger format book, which my editor is warning me could be problematic in terms of higher shipping costs or higher production costs. But I think that I might have to do that nonetheless, because in order to make this the like sort of comprehensive treatment of Hellenistic astrology and the history and the philosophy and the techniques that I want it to be, that includes just like tons of beautiful diagrams and really great chart examples, I'm going to have to, you know, expand it beyond the usual format, but I think it's going to be worth it. So
fantastic.
We'll see what happens.
You're going to give birth to a beautiful baby brick.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll check in again in a month and we'll see where that's at.
We'll be able to catch up. Yeah. And Austin, you had said something that made me very happy earlier in the show today, which was about how Mercury in Virgo can be really good for writing and editing, that type of thing, which is really coming in for September, because I've got a massive writing month planned. So if you guys are still in the writing cave for September, I shall join you there.
Indeed.
Good. I definitely,
they won't let me out for a while.
Okay, good.
Good. All right. And I wanted to say also, just like, thanks to all of the listeners and especially all of the Patreon supporters that have been supporting this, because my writing, you know, project was originally, I planned for like 3 months earlier this year, and I overshot that terribly. But literally the only way I've been able to continue focusing on writing and research over the past several months in order to write this book is because of the sort of like income that's still coming in through doing the podcast each month. So the people supporting the podcast are not only helping to support the production of the podcast, but they're literally helping me to write this major book right now. And that's kind of a big deal to me. So I just wanted to take a minute to say thanks to everybody who's been doing that, because it's a huge deal. And I think it's going to really turn into something worthwhile. So thanks everyone for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks, Austin and Kelly, again, for joining me and for doing these monthly podcasts. I mean, I know everybody seems to look forward to these, and it seems to have turned into a thing, even though, you know, we put it together kind of haphazardly about a year ago now, but we've been doing it for a year, and it seems like it's really turned into something worthwhile and something special.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for having us. And mm-hmm. Austin, I mean, it's just a love to check in with you guys every month. But you've reminded me, Chris, I was in Toronto. Wade Caves and Lee Lehman were here doing some horary teaching earlier this month, and I popped in for a couple of days and was really lucky to meet, I think, maybe a third of the people there are actually listeners of the podcast. And it's so fun to meet people in real life. And I just wanted to say thanks to everyone who, A, does listen, and then, B, will come up and say hi, you know, IRL when we're in the flesh. So it's lovely to connect with everyone.
Yeah, that's always really awesome, because it's like I have some, it's tough to track podcaster, the metrics on the podcast, and I know we have something like 2,000 listeners, give or take, that are regular, like regular listeners and subscribers. But it's actually interesting to run into people like in person and find out that they have actually listened to a lot of the episodes or that they're a regular listener. And it's always great to get that kind of feedback and to actually connect, you know, who our audience is out in the community, and finding out that so many people are listening to it is really fulfilling, because otherwise it's usually just, you know, like me talking to one other person or the three of us talking to each other one day, and then we sort of release it and it gets a few likes on Facebook, and then you're never fully sure like what kind of impact it's had. But when you start running into people in person, it's always really, really nice.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think I'd kind of forgotten that people actually do listen to us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really easy.
It's not just the three of us shooting the breeze.
Right, because for all practical purposes, it's like that's what it is each month. But then every once in a while, you realize that, like, you know, 1,000 people have actually listened to it and took, you know, whatever stupid joke we made like earlier in the episode, like really to heart or like something like that. All right, well, let's wrap this up. Kelly, what's your website?
Oh, kellysastrology.com.
Austin?
I am austincopcock.com, AustinCopcock.
All right. And I am at chrisbrennanastrologer.com. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.